That was the song Halloween off of Keep It the Seven Keys, Part 1. Well, right now, we have a little bit of surprise here. He's been the guitar player in Halloween since 1989 and recently is just a part of the band. We're live on air right now. I have Roland Grappa. Rolando, great to see you. How's it going?
Yeah, I'm fine. Hey, nice to talk to you. And it's a surprise because I forgot the marathon, honestly, because I came just back from L.A. from Roy Z. And I stayed there for a week for, like, you know, writing songs and arranging and everything. It was quite fun. So, but, you know, I had a bad week. Maybe you know about it already. So I'm not in Halloween anymore. So same for Uli, the drummer.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, when did you get the news and were you kind of shocked?
Yeah, I was really totally surprised because we played the last show in Spain and the day after I went to L.A. to see Roy and my wife called me and she just said, hey, you're not in the band anymore, Uli as well. And I really, you know, was really surprised. So there wasn't anything before I expected something like this, you know. Of course, we had, you know, talks and discussions here and there, but, you know, there wasn't anything bad. So I felt that is a reason to get me out of the band. Whatever, man, that's past. So it's like people and fans, they should know about it now. And I just like to say, hey, thanks for the last 12 and a half years.
Mm-hmm.
I joined the band Christmas, a week before Christmas, 88, and it was a wonderful time for me, also a hard time, and the best experience in the music scene I could get, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm still there, Uli as well, and we're going to do a new band. It's not a side project anymore, we always spread it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have to do a new band, and we have to rethink what we're going to do, and we definitely like to keep the Halloween style in our music. And so it's not that we try totally something else, because our heart is still the Halloween music. And we are part of this band for a long time. We were part of the band for a long time. And in the past, I didn't write so many fast songs because I always left this for Wyke's part, you know, because he's more famous for the faster songs. And so I made more of the, you know, more heavy stuff or a little bit more modern stuff. So, but on this next, you know, band project we're going to do, we will have all that shit, you know. Will be a nice Halloween record with a new band name, of course.
Now, so. I guess my next question to you is, you know,
yeah,
maybe to dispel any rumors, there really isn't any animosity between you and the band now. You're just kind of happy to be out and on your own again now?
I was shocked. Normally I was really disappointed because I didn't feel anything was happening before. But on the other side, we decided, both sides, that we don't want to talk anything bad about the other guys. And there is nothing, you know. There's nothing to say anything bad. It's maybe like if you're married for a long time and you don't love your wife so much anymore and then you have to be separate, you know. So we're kind of divorced now. That's it. But there's nothing bad, so I think if we see each other somewhere in a club in Hamburg or something, I don't think it's anything bad.
Okay.
I don't think so. I don't want to, because we learned so much about the past, about, you know, the Michael Kiske fights in the press and on the net. You know, I don't want to,
mm-hmm.
because this is stupid. It's wasted energy. And people want to hear good music from Halloween and from our new band. And when we're fighting against each other, then, you know, you
mm-hmm.
can write any songs because we are creative people and we need to be really calm and, you know, we need to be inspired, not by fighting with somebody, you know, that's a fact, you know. Even, I'll just tell you the fact, and in L.A. when I was in Roy's place, I didn't check any email, I didn't have any telephone. So I just knew I'm not in the band. I talked to Uli, and that's it. So there wasn't anything, you know. I really focused on my songwriting, and I said, hey, that's my future now. I need to take care much more instead of my solo career. This was more fun, more side projects always. This is my future and Uli's future, and we have to find good members now and to create a new band and a good, you know, music.
Now, in case anyone just tuned in, we're talking with, I guess, now departed and former guitar player Roland Grappau from Helloween, who's in the band from 1989 till...
Hey, it sounds still weird for me after a week. Former band. Former guitar player or something. Huh?
Kind of like when you play at the Whack in Open Air, they said that. So I guess my next question to you, and the biggest question most people would want to know is, what's in store for the future? Are you and Uli going to stay together and with this band you're pretty much forming?
Yeah, I think we had the idea like 2 months ago, like to do this side project, but I told you already, so now we have to rethink everything to create even a stronger band, to make a typical kind of good melodic metal band. Before, we wanted to do something else, like more progressive, more maybe a little darker here and there, like the Dark Ride influence here and there. But now we like to do, we like to keep the same music. It's not our fault that we're not in the band anymore, but we still like the style of Helloween. And so we're going to keep it. Hey, it's maybe good to have another concurrence on the market coming out of Germany. And so I think the fact is that we're going to start the record still in October, and something releases maybe February, March. So we're pretty fast. It's still because I wrote already 8 songs and Uli has like 5 songs. Mm-hmm. And we will do more, you know. We have another 6 weeks for writing and rehearsing, so we will prepare pretty much, you know, and pretty good. And, Roy is helping on the creative side, and Andy Sneap is producing still, you know. Mm-hmm. But about the band details, I don't want to say too much in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as, you know, the producers are concerned, Andy Sneap obviously is well known for this unbelievable productions, and so is Roy Z. Now, my question to you, obviously, Roy, is we're going to be the type of guy you're going to be working with a lot in the future, and what about Andy Sneap? What do you think of him in the short time, I guess, that you've known him?
He's a wonderful guy. I just talked to him many times on the phone. He's so friendly. He gave me all the information for studio effects, you know. I'm really interested to create good sounds, and always, you know, like to keep an eye what these guys doing, you know. Because in my future, maybe I like to produce in my studio a little bit more here, a little bit, you know, maybe bands from Germany, something like this. But I know that these guys have more experience, and they have a clue, you know. And I can imagine that Andy Sneap I like to keep as well. So for me, the dream team is maybe together, like Andy Sneap and Roy Z. Both are guitar players, incredible good guitar players. And both are famous for good ideas and very good sounds. And this time, I really have to say, hey, there's no compromise anymore. Now I keep an eye on the sound. I don't want to have a sound I'm not satisfied, you know, or artwork I'm not satisfied anymore. So it's like we want to do everything right now. And we have a chance. So let's see if you like it, you know.
Not kind of going back in the past, actually the very near past, how did the Dark Ride tour go for you? And, you know, what was it like, I guess, working with what I would call probably another dream team in a Dark Ride? You had Charlie Bauerfein and Roy Z. What was that like?
That was quite interesting because, you know, both are totally different guys. And Roy, you know, I told you, is more the guitar player, creative arranger, and very good in guitar sounds as well. And Charlie is more the engineer guy, who's also very nice producing in the drum parts and here and there. But both fits very nice together, you know. I think it was also very good to have these guys, but Charlie's already, like, totally busy with Blind Guardian, and I think he's still busy till December. And then I heard he has also different projects, so he's not available at all in the moment, so... Mm-hmm. I talked to him recently, and he's always helping me as well, and he sent me information about our system we use both together, you know, in the studio, and but he's not available. That's the problem.
So I guess another question would be then...
And I think he will do also the next Helloween record, so I think it's not good to use the same producer, because then too many stories happen, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's all... If that's how the music business goes, I guess.
Yeah.
My next question to you, someone wanted to know, so a guy from New Jersey actually wanted to know, will you sing on the next record?
No. No, there was a plan to have on our project first, Russell Allen from Symphony X. And I met him also in L.A. last week,
mm-hmm.
and it was great. So he stayed for 2 days there. But, you know, the problem is he's still in Symphony X, so he's a member of the band. And he's going to Europe on tour. He's not available for the studio time we normally booked him. And I need to rethink. I mean, it's maybe not nice to say something like this on an interview, but maybe we will have a different singer as mm-hmm. well, or maybe a German guy.
Mm-hmm. and it's not Michael Kiska.
I didn't say anything. No.
Well, most people are going to be mailing me now asking me that.
That's good. I'm just spreading anything, like little rumors without saying anything. You can't blame me. I didn't say anything. I just said a German guy. We have a lot of singers here.
there are a lot of good German singers out there.
Yeah, we have a couple of very good singers. Yeah.
There's a lot more.
And for me, it's a good thing to keep the whole band more, I would say 90% or 80% like in German, you know,
mm-hmm.
control. Not to have this international feeling. It's the international band I had like on my Kaleidoscope record was
mm-hmm.
two project kind of feeling, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to go to the bass player or wherever Uli is anyway in Germany. And just to call him and say, hey, let's go out for beer and come to my house and we're going to write a song. That's not possible with a guy from Australia or America, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I like to keep everything under the German flag.
Well, it's also kind
no,
of...
No, I don't want to sing on the record, honestly. don't worry.
So I guess with this whole band project you're coming up with, I mean, obviously Uli, especially in the last couple albums, has written some excellent songs. You know,
yeah.
Obviously you have Mr. Torture, and Departed, and of course,
yeah.
Better Than Raw has 4 songs he wrote, and then the Japanese version of Time of the Oath has 4 songs he wrote. And, you know, I guess since I haven't really talked to him yet after this whole situation happened, I mean, how does he feel about it? Is he pretty much feeling the same way as you about being out of the band and everything like that and going forward with this project?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit stupid to say we're happy, but it's a kind of, you uh-huh. know, the whole pressure is gone. Because
mm-hmm.
Halloween is a lot of pressure, you know. We were a really democratic band. We had a lot of discussions in the past and a lot of problems here and there, you know. Most of the people know about it, you know, like the old Noise story and the old former members, you know,
mm-hmm.
shit. And this mm-hmm. is pretty normal. I think every band will have it. Maybe this next band, we will have problems as well here and there. But this time we try to keep it more under control. Like if we find a singer which we like really to involve in the band, we like to have it like under control of 3 guys more or less, you know, Uli, me and the singer then.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, 5-6 people are sometimes you get really crazy if everybody has his opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Then, because in the past, like in the 70s, 80s, beginning or 90s, most of the bands, they have a band leader.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody is always saying, this is the way it has to go, you know. And I think if this guy is really good and clever, it's a good choice. But in Halloween, nobody was a leader. That was a problem. And on this band, we do it like with 2-3 guys. And it's maybe hopefully easier.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you say in German, if too many cooks cooking the soup, then something's happened, you know,
faulty
or whatever.
Too many fish.
Kind of speech.
Too many fish in the sea.
Ah, okay, that's what you have.
That's what we see over here. Now,
they're fucking in some.
Now, I guess my basic question to you would be, I'm going to kind of dig back in the past. You were talking about, I guess, past things that happened in the band. Now, you came into the band during a pretty rough period of time. During back in the Pink Bubbles Go Away thing. I just kind of want to go through each era, I guess, and, you know, what do you remember about that era? You know, what do you remember about that whole Pink Bubbles Go Away sessions? Of course, Chris Tangaritis was the producer and all that stuff. And, you know, what do you remember about that? You know, can you maybe tell me a little bit about that?
You know, when I joined the band, it was like the end of the Keeper 2 tour. So I joined the band, and Halloween was really big. You know, we went to America, first show in Seattle, then Japan we did. Then we did a long break, and then, you know, we had like waiting for Chris Zangaridis for 6 months because he was with the Painkiller album so busy with Judas Priest. And it was really like getting on the nerves, you know. We were ready to record an album, and then he came like 6 months later, and everything started in the studio to be more trouble, you know, to be more in trouble. Something like you know, discussions again between band members, blah blah blah. And I was so new in the band and so shy. I never was involved in any discussions there. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my experience I had. So, and Chris drafted me. I did my 3 songs, and he liked, or did I 4? I don't know. 4 songs?
you did. Let me think here. 1, 2, 4.
4. I did. Yeah. Yeah, 4. Believe me.
You did. Did do 4.
It was great.
Right.
You know, I was. My English was really bad. It's still not so great, but you know. But Chris liked me, and he said, yeah, you're a good guitar player, and so you wrote a couple of really kind of hard rock metal songs, you know, which is good for Halloween. But on the other side, we had a lot of songs which we never used on the record, which was really weak,
uh-huh.
Like we used later on the Chameleon record, you know.
Uh-huh.
And a couple of songs are even not released from the Pink Bubbles,
uh-huh.
Like two songs, I remember.
Uh-huh.
And so it was like a totally fucked up situation. I mm-hmm. came in the band, but the whole band decided to do this, like a soft rock album after the 2 Keepers records, man. What was that? And Chris tried to do his best job he could do, you know, but it was really hard for him, for me, for everybody. And we stayed for, I don't know, for 4 months in Denmark on a country field next to the cows. You know, it's always... was like a very bad smell.
now was it true that thing cost £400,000 to record that album?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that's what Michael Kiske told me one time in an interview. That's
I think so, it's true, yeah. Yeah.
Well, anyway, yeah. Really quick.
I wish we had we would get so much money from selling a record.
I guess what we'll do is we'll go and play the song The Chant, and what I'll do is right after this, we'll come back on the air and we'll talk for a little bit more. But this is Roland Grappa. We have him live on the air. And for anyone that's just tuning in, and of course, he is, of course, a dearly departed from Halloween, but still going strong as far as a musical standpoint goes. So we're going to play The Chant, and we'll be right back. We're back here on the Halloween Marathon, and right now we still have with us live, we have Roland Grappa, the, I guess, now former guitar player of the band. Roland?
Yeah.
Now,
don't mention this every time. No, it's cool. I'm the former. The former guy.
Now, here's another funny... Now here's another...
I'm not a farmer. Former guitar player. Okay, I'm funny. Okay.
Okay, I guess my next question to you then, you know, we'll go through the era, the Chameleon era when you were in the band, and maybe describe the feel of that. Describe the whole thing, I guess, of that whole era, what happened there. And I guess you guys had the whole split with Michael Kiske, and obviously Ingo was asked to leave the band before the tour, or even before the Japanese tour. And
wow, yeah. That's a long time ago, man. Uh-huh. I don't remember all the details, but I just remember the recording was hard as well, but we did it in Hamburg. And this time, the whole band decided to make this album happen, the soft rock kind of album.
Mm-hmm.
Even me, so I wrote a couple of poppy... cheesy songs, I would say. But a lot of people like the record, you know. It's a different quality. And the nicest thing on this record was, like, we spent so much money on it so we could produce everything in real, like, to have a brass horn section,
uh-huh.
like, orchestra. We did a church organ in a church, you know, recording, a choir, like, in a church, everything. So it was like a high-class big production, you know. Then we went, Mikey Kiske and me, after recording to L.A. for mixing with Mike Wagoner. That was a nice experience because he was flying with his plane, you know, like Bruce Dickinson, and so he invited us. Yeah, that's a different story. Okay, but we mixed the record there, and so he was one of my idols from the 80s, so he did so many great records, Mike Wagoner. And he's a nice guy, so it was nice. So I stayed there with Mikey Kiske for 2 weeks, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it was expensive, man. The whole record was so expensive. And of course we didn't sell so much because of a different style.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole situation went bad for us. You know, the EMI record company wasn't so interested for the next record anymore. Then we went on tour. We wanted to promote this record. You know, we really believed in the kind of music for a while,
mm-hmm.
like 6 months or 1 year. We really thought that's a good choice or a good step to do, you know. And we went on tour and we played so many new stuff on this record, and people really get scared live or confused or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw so many wide open eyes and with a question mark in it, like, what is this, you know? And after a while I realized it, and Wyke as well, and we did a summer break, because on the European tour Michael's voice was like totally screwed, since the name,
mm-hmm.
whatever. And so we did a break for 6 months, and then we went to Japan for the last couple of concerts, you know. And I think how I remember was like the end of 93.
Mm-hmm.
And we just felt, hey, something is really bad, you know, because we get used to the record already, like about the 6 month break.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt something is not Halloween anymore here. And so EMI decided not to work with us anymore on the end of the year, so we lost the deal, and we lost our fans, and life was no fun at all, because we played only acoustic guitars and ballads and something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And after, I think it was the second last show in Tokyo, I just decided, hey, that's it, we lost everything.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should go back to work, man. And then Wyke and me and Marcus, we decided, hey, we need to change drastically something. And so there was a big problem before already, sorry, I forgot it, with Ingo.
Mm-hmm. He was schizophrenic.
In the studio, he was like a little bit, not right. So he was getting sick, and so I don't want to talk about this, mm-hmm. this too much, you know.
But
we had a different drama in Japan, I remember, I'm not sure about
Richie Abernathy.
I make stories already, sorry, it's a long time ago. I'm getting old, you know.
Now, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, and I remember being at your house and you playing me old versions of Step Out of Hell, which wasn't called Step Out of Hell, an old version of music that you played with Rampage.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And,
I had two songs.
And what did you...
Step Out of Hell and music, yeah, right.
And why did you decide to kind of redo these songs and use them for Halloween?
Yeah, because I really liked these songs from the beginning of the 80s and Wyke as well. So I just changed little bits and pieces. So, but on the end, it sounds still like songs from 81 or 82, you know. They're still old-fashioned.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a wrong choice to use these songs.
Mm-hmm.
So, I like this kind of music, but not on Halloween,
mm-hmm.
you know. It's not the right style.
Now, you have a song called Crazy Cat, which is kind of a crazy song on the album, actually.
Yeah.
And I guess there's only one cat left, right?
Yeah, right.
There's one cat left. I guess my thing is, you know, were you influenced by a lot of stuff, I guess, different types of music, you know, because Crazy Cat has a lot of different horns and stuff like that in it. Were you at the time influenced by stuff like this?
You can imagine, like, 93 or 92 when we did mm-hmm. the record. Extreme was really big.
Mm-hmm.
They had a big hit and a couple of other bands. So, and if you hear the rhythm, it's a kind of, you know, Van Halen kind of boogie
mm-hmm.
shuffle. And I like this shit. You know, sorry.
Okay, go on. Go.
And so the problem is... My old kind of influence from the 70s and 80s were still so strong at that time that I couldn't get rid of it. It was like, hey, I always wanted to do something like this and try to get it in Halloween. So I told you in the beginning I wasn't so secure about my musical style or something like this, you know. And I think the problem, nobody told me not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the Halloween members did what they wanted to do, always. And if I found like two or three guys in the band who liked my songs, then it was on the record. So easy was it, you know. We never talked to record companies or manager or something like this. We always decided we do it and that's it. No control from outside.
Now, you got... Oh, go on. sorry.
And yeah, so but that changed, you know. So now I have more clue, hopefully. And so let's see.
Now, here's my next question to you. Then, were you guys more, I guess, not a Democratic band back then, or were you more you Democratic band now, or were you guys like, for instance, the lineup you were with now, you know, from '94 through, you know, to I guess a couple weeks ago or a couple days ago. How did that being in that lineup differ, I guess, from being in a lineup you were in with the Chameleon Pink Bubbles Records?
Before?
Yeah.
I
mean, was it more Democratic now than as opposed to when you guys...
I think so. Because in the past, I told you, like, I started to talk to or to be more involved as a spokesman in the band when we had Andy and Oli in the band. I felt more... Not to be so much under pressure anymore, you know, because I was new in the band, I told you, and it took a couple of years. And nothing against bad to Mikey Kiske, you know, he's a nice guy, and I still am in contact with him, so. Boom, that says everything, so we don't have any problem, but he was such a strong guy in the past, so I was, you know, more listening instead of telling him my opinions. But now I'm strong as well, because I needed my experience. And it takes a long time. I mean, if you start in the music business like he did, he was 19. When I joined the band, I was 29. So he was already like a big star, you know. And I was a youngster, even when I was older than him, because my experience was so little. But now I have the same. So maybe now we have the same level to talk, you know. Cool. No, but it was a Democratic band before as well. But, you know, that Wyke and Michael, they were the strongest. So they always...
Well,
no, decided a little bit more than the other guys.
Well, we'll be right back after. I'm going to play the song Crazy Cat. Have to play it. It's what Roland named his studio, Crazy Cat Studio. We'll be back right after the AP News. And we'll be back right after the AP News at the top of the hour. And we'll talk a little bit more with Roland. And if you have any questions you want to ask him, you know, we're back here on the Halloween Marathon. Time now is 2:11. And we have Roland Grappo on the air. And I guess... I got three words to say to you, and I want you to tell me what these three words mean to you, Roland, and that are the words Grand Funk Railroad.
I don't know. No, that's, of course, my idols, man. Grand Funk Railroad is my, I would say, the second or third band I was really into it. The first, I think, was like Creedence Clearwater Revival. And then I heard Grand Funk and Uriah Heep, live record, you know. And the Grand Funk Live album was so aggressive compared to what was happening in 1970, I think was it released. And then I bought all the albums, you know, I was a big fan and I really liked the singing of Mark Farn and the guitar playing and the best part of, I mean, it's funny, even if I'm a guitar player and was really influenced by Mark Farn, but I love the bass. Mel, what's the name in English? Schacher, Mel Schacher, Schacher.
I don't know.
That's a bass player's name, so it's a funny name. I can't really tell you how, you know, pronounce it. But the bass was so distorted, you know, so dominant. It was a three-piece band in the beginning, and it was really always fun to play these kind of songs to my friend. Listen to the bass, man. It's like, like great. But he got a lot of nice, you know, melody lines, and so he was a really good bass player, and the drummer, Dom Brewer, unbelievable, man. He was like an animal. And so everything was, you know, everything came from the 60s, a little bit, the music, but more distorted, more wilder, more screaming, and the live record was like a lot of improvising, you know, on songs like Into the Sun and something like this. So they really influenced me. That's why I started playing guitar and singing.
Now, I guess my next question to you will be, you know, I want to ask you about the whole Master of the Rings era. I guess this is kind of like the band's attempt basically to reclaim their throne at the top of, you know, melodic metal. And what was it like trying to record it, you know, recording that album, you know, after the Chameleon record with the new lineup? And I guess how did you guys get your record deal with Castle Communications? You know, I'm kind of wondering... You know, after the whole Chameleon album pretty much flopped, you know, how they took an interest in you guys.
I can't remember if we had the deal in the studio, at the studio time, or after, or right before. I'm not really 100% sure, because it was so fast, you know. I think we started in the end of January 94, and so we're really like totally inspired by the two new members. Maybe that's what they think they have on the next record again. So it was really cool, you know, and Uli came and was, you know, totally different drummer. So and Andy wrote a couple of good songs. Everything went fast, you know. The work in the rehearsing studio was nice, you know. It was totally different, nice vibe, really friendly, everything. Because we didn't know each other so much, we respected more the new guys. So and we always treated them very nice, like good new friends. And so I think the result was really fresh, totally good new batteries on the kind of music, you know, we did. And I felt, yeah, that's already a good big step compared to the Chameleon record, back to the Halloween style.
Mm-hmm.
And even if people really had trouble with the new voice of Andy, they accepted because the music was great.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the main thing. I mean, the production was good. You know, it was a big thing coming back to the scene. And the tour was really like successful, amazing, good. It was really good. Had a good feeling there.
Now,
it's a round thing, a really nice thing.
Now, my next question to you, you know, moving on from that era, you went to, you know, Time of the Oath, and, yeah, you know, from Master of the Rings to Time of the Oath, and I guess how did that go? I mean, you had the Master of the Rings album, which is very successful, then you go to Time of the Oath, which kind of really cemented the band. I mean, it just kind of, I mean, that record is still, to this day, probably a lot of people's favorite, you know, Halloween record. And I guess, you know, what do you remember most about that whole era?
Yeah, the Time of the Oath, I would say was one of the best Halloween records, because we have so many good songs on it, but the production is not so 100% my taste, so it's a kind of mid-rangey, old-fashioned sounding, and if it would have a sound like On the Dark Ride on it, so it's one of the, kind of still the best records, you know, because we have power on it. I mean, Time of the Oath was new, little bit influenced by, I would say, Dream Theater. I was, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I'm always a little bit influenced by this and that. But, you know, it's still Halloweenish, so people get used to it. On the first tour, was okay. The reaction on the next tour we did, Time of the Old Song, was brilliant. People really liked it. You know, it was like, wow. It was always like this. They're always watching. You know, the same. This tour, in the beginning, Escalation 666. You know, and then on the end of the tour, people more getting used to it, and then, well, good reaction in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Time of the Oath, I had a good memory. Honestly, the tour was really big. We did the live record after that, and I just remember between 60, 80 shows we did worldwide, and I went once on the Hamburg show of Yngwie Malmsteen on his tour bus, and I gave him the record, and I played him like Time of the Old, you know, on the bass, and he liked my solo so much. He said, oh, great guitar sound, he said, and a good song, you know. He didn't expect it. He didn't know so much about Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how he is. And, yeah, it was really good. So everything was fine. But after that, I had a feeling like you know, I'm not so involved in the press. Like supporting the band. So I was one of the songwriters always, and I would say the management decided, and maybe record company decided, to just present two guys of the band. So it started really on that time that I get more interested in doing a solo record, because I felt, hey, that's not right. I want to talk about my songs.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about Halloween. I want to talk about lyrics, and not to see just two guys in front of the band. That's not Halloween how it was before.
Mm-hmm.
Before it was like Mikey Kiske, Wikey, and me, you know, and telling interviews or talking to people. And on the Master of the Rings was still the same, and then on the Time of the Oath it changed, I don't know. And I was always talking to Sanctuary, hey, I want to do interviews, man, I want to talk. And so I was getting more interested in the solo stuff. So that means I couldn't change it. I didn't have the strength to change anything in the band. Nobody was really taking care about my feelings. And so that started already, that I wanted to do something separated. I was more responsible for. So in my easy way to do it, you know, the first solo record was okay, but the sound wasn't so great, you know, blah, blah, blah. And but I did everything on my own, so it was a kind of hard work. And maybe most of the songs I should maybe write more for Halloween, but I didn't. And so that's how when it started. I think it was after the Time of the Oars, you know, tour.
Mm-hmm. Now with the whole, Four Seasons of Life, that whole album, you know, what was it like making that album? I mean, you pretty much did everything. You sang, you did put a bunch of instruments, you played guitar, you produced it, you mixed it.
Yeah.
And I mean...
I never do it again. It was really hard. So I thought I really could do it. That's so easy, I thought, because I had a little studio already, very little. My Crazy Cat studio was just, you know, the first thing I bought was like a 8-track system and something like this, and I did everything in my little room, not real amplifiers, not real drums. Everything was like sample loops and this. Uli was playing on it, but it was like on a D-drum. Maybe some people know what it is, like a digital drum computer, but you have to play it still. And everything was really improvised, and on the end, I had a lot of pressure from management and the record company that they wanted to have the tapes, so I was really rushing the vocals, and on the end I really was so burned out that I even one of my ear was like a little bit, you know, I didn't say the word again but I had an infection or something, so I couldn't hear just I could hear just half of it, of the frequency, and then I mixed the record. It was like, you know, a little weird. And when I finished the mastering on the next day, even on that day, I went to Japan to deliver the mastering to the record company and do promotion. And so that was too much for me. It was really too much. I decided to do something like this never again. I will have an engineer or a producer, and I just do the music and playing guitar and control a little bit. But that's it, you know. You have to do priorities in your life, and I thought on the Four Seasons of Life I could do everything, but I can't do it. It's not possible. I'm not challenged enough.
Now, for those of you just tuning in, we're on here with guitarist Ron Grappo. I guess he's not the guitar player anymore, but he's kind of on his own venture now. We're on the phone with him right now, live. My next question to you, then, you know, you're going into the album better than Raw, and I guess a lot of people, especially fans, were kind of unhappy you didn't write anything on that album. And I guess, you know, what was that era, what was that time of the band like for you? And I guess that was also the time you played that show in New York City in January 20th, 1998, I believe, was the date for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I told you, so after the Time of the Oars, I started to do more solo stuff, and so... When we started to do the pre-production for the Better Than Raw, I just had one number, which ended up later on the Kaleidoscope record. So mm-hmm. I was a kind of burned out, I really have to say it. So, but on the other side, I was really there to helping the other guys on writing on their songs. I mean, especially the riff for Push of Uli, so that was one of my ideas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I never get credit for, so I don't care so much about it. It's the same like Roy Z is always saying, hey, I don't care, man. He's doing so much. If we would get giving him credits from the Last Dark Ride album, you won't believe it. Mm-hmm. He was really involved in everything. But that's, you know, different story. But the Better Than Raw, I felt a bit, you know, out already, like doing just like working as a studio musician, playing guitars and a couple of songs, doing my solo parts, and it's kind of hard if you do then interviews after this and you know you didn't write anything on it, so I felt a little bit stupid.
Uh-huh.
But I was professional enough to present the album right, and especially on the tour after this, I did a good job as far as I remember, and so I never talked bad anything about it, so it's a good record. And that's a brilliant artwork, definitely. I like the artwork of Rainer Love, so we will keep him for our next project, our new band. Uli is already working with him. And so this is, it's a very good album. It was also very important for Halloween, and I really like a lot of songs of Andy and Wiki, and Uli, of course. So, nothing against it.
Now, what was
it? My fault. I should present more songs.
What was it like playing that show in New York City? I mean, what was that like for you guys to come and play a show here in the U.S. for the first time in, well, what would have been back then, 10 years?
Yeah, 10 years. Yeah, it was like a nice experience because I didn't expect so many people. I thought we lost more or less all the people we had like 10 years before. But a lot of people came and they enjoyed it, even if we had just borrowed equipment. I mean, I didn't play my guitars at all there because my guitars were still, you know, in Brazil at the customers. And they kept it, and I think my amplifiers as well, so my pedals, everything. So I used just, you know, some gear from any record shop from New York. And when I see the pictures, I think, oh, that's a nice color of the guitar, but it's not mine. And the whole club, I mean, I just heard, I think you mentioned it, the club doesn't exist anymore.
No, they condemned it.
Yeah, so it's like, it was a nice thing, but the PA inside was terrible. It was like, you know, we improvised a lot. I mean, the drums are not really mic'd up. We had just two microphones for the whole drum set, which we never did a gig like this before. But the people liked it. That's the main thing. So they enjoyed to see us and hear the tunes if they could understood the, you know, frequency or the melody. Because the sound, I don't think, wasn't so great. But this was a nice feeling to play there. I wish we could have more shows in them. Mm-hmm. America.
So my next question to you then, you're coming off of the whole, I guess, Better Than Raw era, and you know, I remember talking at the time, I guess you were talking about when Jens Johansson went to the show and visited you, and you had him guest on your next solo album, which is Kaleidoscope. Now, why don't you give us a little bit of detail, you know, about that whole time, I guess time in your musical career, you had almost an all-star lineup, you know, Mike Biscara on vocals, and you had...
Mm-hmm.
You know, how did that whole thing get together? And, you know, maybe tell us a little bit about that tour. You had that whole tour for the Kaleidoscope record as well, touring with Gamma Ray and going on stage with Kai Hansen to do a couple Halloween tunes.
Yeah, it was cool, man. So I really learned that I have to use the time on tour for writing songs because I have so much spare time, like waiting for the gig or a day off or travel day, you know, and it's useless just to you know, watch TV or to drink like beer, you know, like 50 bottles each day or something. It's, you know, so I was writing songs. It was the first time I really wrote 80% of my solo record on the tour. We supported Maiden, you know. It was like nice, you know, like little show, like 55 minutes we did, and then I was early back in the hotel, and I used like every day like 2-3 hours for writing songs. And so when we came to New York, the end of the tour, so Jens Johansen came, and even Mike Vachera came for watching the show, but Jens Johansen came to the hotel, I think one day before, and he brought little equipment, his keyboard, and I had my stuff with me, like equipment for recording. And he just played like 2 solo parts on it, and then he went home and he saw the show next day. That's it, you know. It was so easy. We had a couple of coffees and a pizza later, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't want to have any money, so he was so great, such a nice guy, you know. And when he heard the record later, he really liked it. Even his brother Anders, the drummer of Hammerfall.
Uh-huh.
They really liked the production. They said, hey, it's really nice sounding. It's not so overproduced, but they liked it. They liked the songs, you know, because they of course, you know, they're also former Yngwie members, and I used a couple of Yngwie members, all of them. And so they spent a really interest. And so they liked it, and it was really like an honor.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really happy with the solo part he did, you know.
So my next question, we're still here, by the way, if anyone's just tuning in with Roan Grappo. My next question then, you know, you go into the whole period for the Dark Ride, and I guess the one thing I wanted to ask you, the to kind of end this off, sort of, is how was it playing the Wacken Open Air Festival? What was that like? It was the first time Helloween ever appeared there, and I know you played it with the solo band yourself, but what was it like playing with Helloween there? What was the reaction?
I felt like a little bit mixed, honestly, because we went on stage, and before we stayed backstage, and of course, and everything went like a movie away, you know. It's like I was dreaming, because I didn't see any you know, audience before. I just went on stage in front of 25 or 30,000 people, and said, "Wow, what's going on here?" You know. And then we played so fast. We made a shorter set, of course. Like I can't remember, like 1 hour, 15 minutes. And at the rehearsing room, we decided to you know, that's the songs we have to play, and then we have talking a little bit here and there, and then we have this length, you know. But on the end, we played 10 minutes too short. I don't know why. It was a kind of little, you know, crazy things going on that day. But the people liked it. They, you know, we had some extra show, like fireworks on stage, which we didn't use for, I can't remember, maybe 10 years. And so I think the people liked it, we liked it, and we just came, played, and went away. That's the feeling I had, you know, but it was good.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of funny, because this, the guy who owns the festival, he was always asking me, when is Halloween coming, because when I played with my solo band 2 years before, you know, I promised the people on the crowd, hey, Halloween is coming next year. So I felt already stupid a little bit, because it wasn't happened, so I promised something wrong, you know. But this year we did it, and I'm happy I did it with Helloween, so this chance is gone. Next time I do it with a different band. Just to remind you, I'm not in anymore. This dude is crazy. No, I wasn't in LA too long. It was Roland Z, I think.
Well, I guess Roland, the last thing I will ask you, then I'll ask you to hold the line, because there's a couple things I need to say to you before I got to get off the phone. But before we get off the air here, I wanted to ask you, you know, what do you have to, I guess, have to say to people that are wondering what's going on, you know, what do you have to say to anybody? I guess your last words. I guess this is your first actual opportunity to actually talk about everything and kind of go in the past a little bit and talk about your tenure with the band and talk about, I guess, you know, the whole recent situation with you and Uli not being in the band anymore. And I guess, what do you have to say to, I guess, the fans out there about that? You know, what can they look forward to in the future with you?
Oh, that's hard, because the Helloween band and now Uli and me, we decided not to talk too much about the problems we had while we're not in the band anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a case, we were really surprised, because it's just, you know, 1 week ago, after the last show we did in Spain, so I was really surprised, Uli as well. And we were a little bit disappointed, but on the end, we are still happy to do, you know, our future plans. And, you know, it's, I don't have any negative energy in me, you know. It's like, after like 2 days, I was really fine. I said, hey, that's cool. That's my life now. Roy told me, I mean, that was the nicest part I can say, because I stayed on his house for a week, and so he helped me with talking, and like a psychologist, you know. He said, hey, Roland, what's happening? You're a great guitar player. You have a lot of fans everywhere. Uli as well, of course.
Mm-hmm.
You form a new band. You do like a good sounding Helloween band, number two, whatever, with a different name we will find later. And so, hey, he told me, you're driving the car now. You're the bus driver now. So that's your life, and that's good, man. This is what I feel in the moment.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I will do my best now to kick myself in my
butt,
ping-ping, you know? And so, hey, I won't disappoint my fans, hopefully, because my and Uli's fans. So he's writing songs, I'm writing songs, and all the members we will have are allowed to write songs, so we just want to do a good record. And maybe I write 9 songs and somebody just 2.
Uh-huh.
But the plan is we will print the band wrote everything. Mm-hmm. So it does, no ego problem, nothing anymore happened like mm-hmm. this. We're grown up people and we just want to satisfy the fans and do good music with a good sounding record, man.
So, again, Roland, thanks a lot for coming on for us, you know, in such short notice and actually coming on and actually talking about this so soon after it happened.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this informing the fans what's going on. And just hold on for like a few seconds. You know, that was Roland Grappo. He was live on the air.